Welcome, everybody. This is Charles Cook, your host of the Immigration Hour podcast. It's great to be with you again today. Thanks for listening. I sure appreciate it. You know, last week we spent a lot of time delving into the Freedom of Information Act response that I received from the Immigration Service. I told you last Wednesday that immigration would have to conduct a second lottery. Statistically, it was impossible with the number of selections that they made the first time around to actually conclude that they wouldn't do it. What's stunning to me, sitting here today, 5 or 6 days after they announced the second lottery, that the Immigration Service knew this. They knew this in April. So why didn't they select 174,000 men? Even the selection of 110,000, they knew. They absolutely knew statistically was impossible to reach. Now, one thing the Immigration Service, once again, failed to make public. Okay, they told you after basically being outed that they notified an additional 74,000 people that they won the lottery. Well, 74,000 selectees, who knows how many people that is. Now, that would suggest that rather than the 74% response rate on selections for fiscal year 2023 lottery, that the filing rate on selections in the fiscal year 2024 lottery is closer to 40%. Because if they've notified basically 180,000 people for 85,000 slots, well, you know, I went to law school, not math school, but I think that's pretty close to 40%. And the only way to get from 76 down to 40, the two successive years of filings, is to conclude that there was massive fraud in the filing of petitions. Now, some of my colleagues have said, well, surely it probably scared people from filing because they said they're investigating them. Yeah, because many of these filings were illegitimate. As my good friend Greg Siskin points out frequently, you know, you can have two lottery submissions. You can have two legitimate employers file for you. Perfectly acceptable. Nobody is arguing that that's bad. What we're saying is having a company tell you that they will file and submit cases for you, and they're not real job offers. You haven't interviewed for them. You haven't accepted them. You don't have a contract with them. You don't agree with them. You have nothing. You haven't even met them. And they're filing in the lottery for you. That's fraud. But it's, you know, immigration is actually hitting the foreign nationals with that fraud. As to date, as far as I know, they have gone after one employer out of the probably hundreds that have filed applications. Now, I know that attorney Stephen Brown did a FOIA request and asked for the details of multiple application, who filed them, et cetera, and supposedly got a response. He hadn't made it public yet, but he hadn't got a response. Hopefully he does, because I'll be curious to see that. But as far as we know publicly, the immigration's only going after one company for fraud. What they have done, however, is punish foreign nationals who show up at an embassy. This has happened in India. I haven't heard about it anywhere else, but I heard about it in India. You show up at the embassy to apply for their stamp after their approval, and the consulate hits them with a 212A6C1 fraud finding. That is illegitimate. As my friend John Wasden has pointed out several times on LinkedIn, and I think there's litigation available for that because it's illegal. There's no legal basis, which means it's illegal, to find somebody committed fraud when there's no evidence that they did. It has to be an affirmative, material misrepresentation. That's what immigration fraud is. Foreign nationals don't file the $10 filings. That's called done by companies. They don't file the I-120. They don't sign the I-129. They don't sign that. So how is there fraud? How is there material misrepresentation or willful misrepresentation of a material fact, to be more clear? There's not. So this lottery is, again, pointing out that immigration is terribly managed, terribly run. I mean, I know a lot of officers that work there. They're good people. I think all, many of them think their managers are idiots. People running DC who run the lottery. Now, this is not statistically hard. Again, law degree, not a math degree. I figured it out in about 30 seconds after getting the data. How did they possibly not figure? How did they possibly not figure this out? And now we'll be filing H-1Bs through the end of what now October. Let's see. So it goes September. Yeah, October 27th, 28th, 29th is when you'll get to file your H-1Bs through after the start of the fiscal year. And one thing we learned and we know from filings is, and this is historically true, most people file near the end of the 90 days. And the stats that I got from the government showed that this true for 2023. They have 70% filed in the last 30 days and only 30% filed in the first 60 days of the filing period. So immigration will be dragged through this again. They could be done already, but nope, they decided to make this hard. It's like you have a child who, you know, you got to, don't touch the stove. The stove is hot. Don't touch the stove. Oh, you touched the stove. Now you got burned. Immigration gets burned over and over and over again. And that's what I want to talk about today is really the utter, you know, the other collapse of the immigration system. And the problems that USCIS is having. There was an article that came out today in the governmentexec.com website. It's basically a website on government management. And the headline is immigration. There are a number of articles they run, but today, or I guess it was last Friday, as Biden boosts legal immigration pathways, a quote, implementing agency is pushed to the brink. Undersourced and overstressed, USCIS is struggling to keep pace with Biden's immigration legacy. Now, let's be clear, Biden's immigration legacy sucks, but he has done a couple of things. He has done a couple of things, and that includes the creation and the expansion of the parole program. But a lot of what the Immigration Service does is routine processing of, you know, 70% of immigration is family cases, historically. They get paid for that. Another 20% is business cases. They get paid a lot for that. And then they do what are basically free applications, asylum, parole. Now, they can't, they could technically charge for asylum. Trump tried to do that, but that kind of failed because most people that apply for asylum have no money. They could charge for parole, but they don't because most people don't have any money. And then Congress has not really allocated a lot of funds to government. I get that. But what this article focuses on and it is really the expansion of the number of cases. So the asylum cases are probably, they say 842,000 pending asylum cases. There's no way it's that few. I mean, I bet you it's over 1 million and there's a lot more pending. They've got the Ukraine cases, which they illegally charged for the work permits. We're going to get that money back for our clients. Then the parole program. Now, the parole program basically is you are a U.S. citizen. You want to sponsor somebody. Well, you could say, you know, right now it's basically free. You could say it's $100. You could say it's $200. You could charge for that a small fee that would clearly make up for the cost. The Biden administration announced several months last year they were going to raise fees. We thought it would happen in the fall, but they have not issued the follow-up regulation. So we don't know where that is. Here's what they said here, quote, this is from the Ombudsman, said 2022 brought significant new tasks for the agency that would create their own processing operational challenges that will continue in 2023. But this is the article said this, many USCIS employees are taking on new responsibilities as they are more heavily involved in determining upfront whether newly arriving migrants can remain in the country and regularly face deployments to the border to help process and screen those individuals. This is the first time I'm hearing that anybody other than asylum officers are deployed to the border. Now, so this is a lot. It looks like there's a lot of asylum officer stuff in there. Michael Knowles, who is the head of the Asylum Officer Union, said, quote, "We've dealt with backlogs before, but not like this and not with so many other competing priorities." Now, the Immigration Service apparently doubled the number of completed employment-based visas in fiscal 2022. True. All right. But it's their own fault. They basically didn't work on the cases for months. They intentionally didn't work on the cases. And I had to sue them with my colleagues at Impact because they weren't doing their job. This year and in 2022, they did reduce the naturalization backlog. But in many ways, this is like the little Dutch boy. And the flood is coming, you know, the dam leaks, they stick his finger in, and the dam leaks another place, sticks his finger in, and pretty soon you don't have enough fingers to fill all the processes. So what is the government going to do here? Dalal works for AILA, said this, obviously it has an impact on adjudication across the board. There's only a certain amount of staff and a certain amount of funding. And yet immigration is supposedly fully staffed at this point. So what? The one thing I don't get, they never talk about bad management. And I'll give you a great example of this. So the FOIA we just got in our EB-5 case, and part of the filings the government made in that case, they said this. They said that the IPO, which is the Immigrant Processing Center for EB-5s, this was back in March, they had 205 employees. But only 38 adjudicated 526s. Now, the only two things this office is supposed to do are 526s and 829s. Why do they have 200 plus employees and only 39 working on the actual cases? That is a management issue. That's a management issue. And now, one of the things that apparently is an issue that the ombudsman praised immigration for prioritizing hiring because there was a hiring freeze. There was a hiring freeze for 9 months. 9 months. That's it. It wasn't a hiring freeze for 100 years. It was for 9 months. And they threatened to furlough people because people weren't filing. Well, of course, people weren't filing. There was COVID. COVID space. Now, I will tell you, as an immigration lawyer, we kept working during COVID. We had clients come in. Immigration continued. But there were 2 million fewer immigrants that came in during COVID. That, of course, impacts their bottom line. But immigration says, quote, "We are constantly losing people. They have unusually high levels of turnover." Well, why do they have high turnover? High turnover generally suggests that people aren't happy with their job. Now, could be they're grossly overworked, or it could be that they're micromanaged and overmanaged or poorly managed. But immigration is also not obviously used technology in any rational way. Now, because we sued them in the 601A cases, now, through our friends at Impact, now they are digitizing all these files. Well, do you think they'd be digitizing those if we hadn't sued their butts? Of course they wouldn't. They'd be doing something. We forced them to create the HART, the humanitarian asylum refugee, and I don't know, T stands for. That they stuck 601As in, but not 601s, which are the same issue, right? So we forced them to do it, and now they're digitizing all the files, transferring files back and forth, whatever massive centers digitizing this stuff. You force them to do it. But why do we have to force them to do it through litigation? Now, it's kind of crazy. So, a lot of people can blame Congress for this. Congress routinely fails to act on this, and they're not going to act on immigration. So don't expect Congress. I mean, they're committing congressional malpractice right now on immigration. By the way, today is the anniversary of the DREAM Act from 2001. I mean, what is it? It's got to be pretty close to 20 years at this point, 18 years at this point. I think it's 2005 when it was introduced by Durbin, who's still there, and Hatch, who's dead. But the Immigration Service, it's funny, Knowles said, the backlogs have not grown due to laziness. I don't think it's the officers. I think it's incredibly poor management. And again, this article mostly focused on asylum. I'd love to see them talk to officers at service centers and really get the input there into that process. But the immigration service is, you know, they're at a crossroads. They could go completely to the correct side of the aisle and fix this, or they could just let the system keep collapsing. They could just let it keep collapsing, and maybe they will. Maybe they will. That's kind of where we stand with that. Now, the other thing I wanted to talk about today on the immigration, kind of the overarching theme overall of immigration, is this. Where is all the breathless reporting on the massive drop in illegal immigration? Where is the cry on Fox News? Immigration, illegal immigration dropped 70% under Biden. You know, I understand that you know, if it bleeds, it leads. But it's clear that media coverage influences how the public perceives deployment. People still think the border is being flooded, and it's not. They must think they're just missing it on TV. So between December 2022 and June 2023, border encounters by the Border Patrol decreased by 55%. One of the reasons was the Biden administration using their parole powers to parole people in the United States. People we, by the way, desperately need for jobs in the United States. So these other processes Biden created, especially for Cuba, Haiti, Nicaragua, and Venezuela. So Cuban, Haitians, Nicaraguans, Venezuelans, their entry, illegal entry, declined by 95%. 95% between December and June. Wow. Wow. I mean, that's a crazy number. Okay. When we look at this, so ending Title 42 was key. You have to ask yourself, why did Republicans want Title 42 to continue? If it clearly, now, and immigration lawyers told you this, clearly was causing massive numbers of people coming to the border. I have sat with people. I mean, people come to my office. They have a consult with me. They say, I came into the country in March, and they gave me this paperwork. Okay. What do you want? Why did you come? First question I asked them, why did you come? Oh, you know, wanted a better life. No, I'm not saying there's not good asylum cases out there. There are. But people were sold a bill of goods by the Trump administration, by the Fox News, by the press, that the border was open. They kept saying the border was open. Yet they said Title 42 is needed to expel immigrants, but the border's open. Well, if you keep saying the border's open, guess what people are going to believe? That the border is open. But now that Title 42 ended, the border is closed. So what you will see is people that do come probably have stronger asylum cases than in the past, because a lot of people came really just because they could get a better life here. So June 2023 was the first full month that Title 42 ended. And Stuart Anderson and Forbes writes that the Border Patrol encounters for Mexicans dropped 43%. Title 42 inflated encounter numbers by more than 500,000 people. Think about that. 500,000 people, when you say, well, too many people entered. Well, that's true. At least 500,000 of them entered multiple times. Now, the Biden administration has a new asylum rule, which is declared the judge is illegal, which it is. Not a surprise. Clearly illegal. Contrary to law. So what's going to happen when the Biden rule ends or the Supreme Court doesn't sustain it? I don't know, but we might see a little bit of an increase again, but I don't think so. I think that the word is now getting out. The border is closed. The border is closed. the New York Times, and again, I love Stewart because he does a great job with this in his article. On page A15, published an article, number of migrants crossing southern border is down. Yeah, if you go back 3 months, it's on the front page of the New York Times and saying, oh my gosh, crisis. There's tons of crisis. But in reality now, the arrival of these many immigrants actually could result in a boom. Again, on page A11 of the New York Times. Biden border arrests plunge since the end of pandemic era, headline on the Wall Street Journal on June 7th. Arrests have plummeted by 70%. Michelle Haberman, the sudden drop so far defied predictions made by Republican lawmakers and the Biden administration that lifted upon the Biden administration. I don't recall them ever saying that it would result in an unprecedented surge. But it's quite clear what happened, as Nick Smirnoff, Amirov writes, eerily quiet on the border. It's only eerily quiet if you don't understand how the process works. It's really kind of great job, Stewart. I mean, he does a great job with the National Foundation for American Policy. And at the end of the day, definitely somebody you should be following as part of your immigration information update. So interestingly enough, the Department of State just published a rule that would allow private attorneys to attend certain appointments at embassies and consulates. This is a stunning, stunning change. Stunning change that the last thing most conservatives wants is a lawyer at the interview. Now, the rulemaking right now only allow point to appointments to apply for a U.S. passport or to appointments offered to U.S. citizens. It doesn't apply to consular, interviews for visas, because they will fight that tooth and nail. But that would be great to see. We also have the new I-9. If you're an employer or you have your lawyer and you have employer clients, make sure they're using the new I-9. The new I-9 is in place. It is a much easier form to use, much easier to fill out. And honestly, kudos to them for doing this. You can also use it online and save physical copies of it. Great stuff. It's really interesting to me to see the constant movement, the constant change in updates to immigration policy procedure in the context of our practice. Immigration law is complicated. It's always changing. It's always up to, and not for the better. And it is no wonder that people are bamboozled by fraudsters, notarios, or even crappy lawyers into doing things that they shouldn't do. A person came to see me yesterday. This is stunning. And he owns a tire shop. He's undocumented. Him and his wife came here 15 years ago, and he opened a tire shop a couple years ago. Guy comes into his tire shop and says, so what's your, and he's also an immigrant. They start talking, and this guy reveals that he's working with a quote lawyer in Miami to get green cards people like him. Oh, really? How do I do it? Oh, just give me this information. This guy literally fills out a questionnaire and signs in a box. Like, he just signed, here's my signature. Has his wife do the same thing. They come to see me. So they did all this about a year ago. They come to see me with a notice of intent to deny their adjustment applications and approved multinational manager and executive immigrant visas, for which they do not qualify. And I had to have a very difficult conversation with them that their best interest would be served by, one, withdrawing the adjustment application for which they do not qualify, as they do not have a legal entry, and two, that they should do a FOIA and find out what was filed. They have copies of nothing. He said, the only thing we signed was this questionnaire. So clearly this fraudster, whether it was a lawyer or a notario, who they now can't get a hold of, whom they never met in person, filed a massive amount of documentation convincing immigration that they had a business abroad, that they had employees. He's the only employee of his tire shop. This is complete fraud, of which this guy is now going to carry the burden. You know, it's no wonder this stuff, people are engañar, they're cheated, they're bamboozled, they're defrauded, because the system is too complicated. The system needs to be way less complicated. When you let me president, I will fix that.
Just kidding. Never running for president. All right. That's the, kind of the wrap for this week's Immigration Hour. Great to be with you. If you have any questions or comments, you can email me at ccook@immigration.net, or just find me on immigration.net, or on Twitter at ccook, on Threads at ccook, on everywhere at ccook. And I'll be happy to chat with you. Maybe, and if you want to be on my, if you want to be on the podcast, we can stream you in. It would be great. We'll talk to you next week. Thanks for participating today. Thanks for listening. Have a great week. Bye-bye.